evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night. We are studying the work of E.J. Gold, and we're working on a particular book called The Hidden Work. We are on Chapter 12 of The Hidden Work. This is our seventh class on Chapter 12 of The Hidden Work. And we're down to the last four pages of the chapter. That's how far we've gotten. It is impressive, Ivan. And what I want to emphasize, first of all, I want to thank Harry for standing in on the phone, in the phone post tonight. And his job, of course, is to listen to what's going on, read the chapter, watch the dialogue on the chat, interrupt me when there's something important to be said. That's all. Does that make sense, Harry?
Yes, and chew gum.
And chew gum. You don't need to walk at the same time. You're lucky this time. I don't know if anybody saw the email that I sent out. There's one very devoted individual here that saw it and possibly even read it. So, and in the email, what I indicated was what we did last week in the chapter, Ivan, and we talked about how do we understand something. Do you recall this?
Mm-hmm.
The idea of what is the nature of understanding. It is important to acknowledge some sense of that and get a feeling for yourself that when we enter a certain space, at that moment, a different form of knowledge is available to us. As long as we stay in what I believe Gurdjieff calls the formatory mind, that's what's available to us, a linear kind of knowledge. So the question is, how do we get to know something? And so I posed the experiment in the email. As I said, go ahead and memorize the prayer absolute. And how do you go about memorizing something? How do you go about committing it to heart? How do you go about just remembering it, right? How do you go about doing that? And there are really a couple of ways. I was wondering if anybody actually had time to, took the time to experiment with some of the things that I talked about, which is, how do you understand and learn something like the prayer absolute? For instance, we can learn it, memorize it, just say it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, right?
Repetition.
Called repetition. That's one way to know it. But there's another way of knowing that we've stumbled across in this chapter. And that's using, as is indicated in, I think, page 125, the idea of necessity. And when there's a necessity to understand something and you move into that space, the knowledge of that space and the knowledge of that information is stored in you in a very different manner. Very different manner. Is Jim H. on?
Yes.
Yeah. So
yes.
That's something that I think will harm it, will resonate with him and the way that he works. But I'm just interested if anybody had a chance to experiment in the way that I'm mentioning here. For instance, the first line, do we remember the first line of the prayer absolute, Ivan?
Motion.
There you go.
Bowing.
Presence.
Comes
to thee. Okay, so those are the words, and we can remember it. In motion, bowing, that presence comes. We just remember, we can write it on our hand, you know, have it written down on our paper where we drive, look at it. But then there's something else that could occur, and this is the heart of the experiment, is look at this structure of that line, this remarkable prayer that's been offered to us in chapter 11, and then in chapter 12, we've gone into it in enormous depth. So it says, in motion, which immediately tells us about the physical, the moving centrum, right? But then there's the next word, in motion, bound. Isn't that interesting? What does that mean? I mean, look what it evokes for you when you say something like that. In motion. So consider yourself standing up, and you're in motion, but you're in motion bowing. Already we have the sense of the ritual, right? Motion bowing. And then it says, my presence comes to thee. Well, it just says, it's just the act of, now I come to thee. Okay? I'm just, I'm unraveling the prayer. And then it says, the next line, humbly, with heart alive, and this is one that Arya responded to a few weeks ago, my presence awakens to thee. So suddenly there's a different activity, but it starts with this phrase. Just think of it poetically. We have a number of poets here, a number of writers, and I'm sitting next to an accomplished poet. And the idea, and some wonderful writers. But the first word, humbly, what does that do when you hear something like that? Dan, what happens? Humbly.
David, there's a few comments here from Jim H. I think are worth listening to. He says that prayer absolute seems to require experiential learning, that we need to feel it in the machine and beyond. Humbly starts to open our heart.
It opens our heart humbly, with heart alive, right? Humbly with heart alive. And then, so what Jim is suggesting here is that maybe we can learn the words, but to understand it requires work, right? You have to work at the darn thing. You have to work at it. It's not just the cool experience you have when you hear somebody reading those nine lines, which we've done a number of times in the class.
Dave, I'd like to just remind all of us that the one word that is used in every one of these lines is present.
Okay.
So this implies that we have a personally felt sense of presence. Now, presence, like our personality, can grow over time. So when we start out on the path, we don't really know if we have presence or not. Over time, though, as we grow and mature and develop, we do have presence. And it's that presence of the essential self, which is how I read this, that begins this climbing of the octave. The presence takes care, brings the human biological machine under control, and then leads up to the higher emotional centers.
So let me just grab what Silverdale has said to us here. As we climb the octave, right? We climb the octave. So I'm sitting there, I think, God, humbly with heart alive, my presence awakens. So now it comes to thee, it awakens to thee. And the next line is?
Comes to know thee.
With clear mind.
So now, with clear mind, my presence
comes to know thee.
Comes to know thee. So it's like, so we have to remember with Silverdale, every line here has something to do with the presence, and that's going to be important when we get to, in a few minutes, but that's super critical. So now there, here we go, we have comes to thee, awakens to thee, gets to know thee. And then, notice, I think this is a brilliant, by the way, prayer that's been given to us. And I think that the level of consciousness to have created such a prayer is stirring for me. It stirs me because this is not, I'm moved by being able to read it. Think of the person that wrote it, you know, and where they were when they wrote it and brought it down to us. So we climb to the octave.
Right.
Now, what's the next one, though? The very next one, what does it say? We have these three motions of the historical personality, the three lower centrums, as George is telling us. And then something happens.
With pity for thy suffering, presence becomes aware of thee.
So something changes there, right? Just the tone of it changes. Suddenly it's like a whole, it feels different, doesn't it? Now with pity. So what pity for what?
Suffering.
So the individual suddenly is in a position where they're able to be conscious of something called thy suffering. I know that, I don't know if Hawk Lady and Aria are on.
They are.
These individuals,
David, Hawk Lady has a question whenever you're ready.
I'm ready for the question. Have you one more second? I just want to say that with pity for thy suffering to those two individuals. That's all. Go ahead.
She asked, my presence awakens to thee, but isn't thee already awake? It's us that needs to awaken to the thee. So is thee within? Is that what it's saying? That's her question.
Okay, so you notice, go ahead. The line is not my presence. Oh, what is it? Really, awakens thee. It's not my presence awakens thee. It's
awakens to thee.
My presence awakens to thee. And you'll notice, if I remember correctly, that that's a capital letter.
Yeah.
Am I correct?
Thee is capital.
Yes.
It's capitalized, so something's going on there. Is presence capitalized?
No.
Is it?
I don't think so, at least not in my coffee.
It is not. So, my presence awakens to thee. So, we've gone
actually,
to these...
Actually, oh yeah, sorry.
Go.
No, I was misspeaking.
So, we've gone through these first three stages, and there's this shift suddenly. Pity for thy suffering. Pity for thy suffering. My presence. Now this is a different function than comes, awakens, to know. Then it says becomes aware. Becomes aware is a pretty active function. So now the presence in the seeker becomes aware.
Silverdale says that we become aware of ourselves as a particle of the suffering of the Absolute.
And this is what's happening, and that's a lot to take on. It's a lot to take on. But that's exactly what's occurring. It's almost a way of saying we become self-aware, but it's big self. We're aware of suddenly of like this position that we're in. And there's a sense of humbler. We are humbled. It's a tough position to stand in. So now, for me, it's like we're in new, strange waters. I've awakened to this. And then the next line blows my mind every time I read it.
With yearning, my presence wishes to comfort thee.
What is yearning? What does the word yearning mean? Does anybody know?
Intense desire.
Say it again.
Intense desire. To yearn for something, to have intense desire for it.
Yeah. But the word yearning, we find it vulgarized sometimes into the mundane. But we find it mostly used in literature for the higher, having something to do with the higher. We see it a lot in Christian literature, in the Christian mystics, rather, when they're talking about their love of God and how they speak that they must be with the Absolute in such a way that, because what's happened? My presence awakens to thee, and then, with yearning,
presence wishes to comfort thee.
Now there's something different there. So the suffering has occurred, and I see this, and now I'm yearning with everything I have to do something called comfort. Don't forget, big capital T here, okay? This is a profound movement we are now in, where we've launched our ship off the shore of the pragmatic historical personality, and we are awash in someplace else now. We're somewhere else at this point, and at this point we look around, we're in this alternative world, and we go, I yearn. When you get in touch with a sense of yearning, when you actually get in touch with that, it burns a hole. Yes? It burns a hole. And yes, that is what you have felt before.
David Aria says it's an overpoweringly intense, persistent longing, something that is compelling.
This is the word I was looking for, was compelling. You're compelled. What is the word compelled? Because within yearning is this sense of being compelled. That you almost feel like you're not operating as your own agent anymore. And that's what's being said here. The, dare I say, the love takes over. You fall into this. But in order to properly fall into it, you must surrender to this place called yearning. Okay? And when you're in that space, and you think of this line, that is a form of knowledge. All right? That's what I was getting to last week. This, where we are right now, is a form of knowledge. In order to re-access this knowledge, we come back to this space. This chamber is available to us. Now, you say, well, yeah, well, that's what we get when we go to the Wednesday night class. I maintain that this prayer is the form of a map, I would call it Silverdale. It's a map. He used the word climb the octave. If we could understand, and this is the heart of chapter 12, chapter 11 introduces the prayer in a sense. Chapter 11. First 10 chapters get us ready for it. then it gets introduced and spoken to us. And then we unwind it in chapter 12, which is so deep. We've taken this much time with it because it's so fruitful. So when we are in that space, can you get into the pure space? Not a memory of it, Arya. Not a memory of what it's like. And what you wrote clearly says you are there at that moment.
David, Jim writes that the HBM is too small for these higher emotions, that you have to expand into the essential self.
This is really well put. So well put. As Silverdale taught us last week or the week before, he says that when those three lower symptoms are harmonized together, right? And then there's an automatic response, it's called the essential self, comes forth. That's what's there. And that's what we're climbing in this octave here. It's a prayer. What is a prayer rather than a roadmap? And this is the roadmap that has been laid at our feet. And only, as Jim H. is telling us, only when we leave the realm called the historical personality, the HBM, can we begin to get big enough to see it. Now, let's expand on that a little bit. Get big enough to see it. That means that we can fill the space that we're talking about right now. And when we are able to be in that space, of course the knowledge that's there wasn't available before. I had an experience that I'm not going to give any details about, except for just one particular moment. And we were in a particular space, very particular space. It was very hot, very intense. And EJ reached across, and I think I've said this before in this class, right? In fact, I know I have. And held out his hand like this. And did I do this with you before?
I think so.
Yeah, just like that. Hold it, hold it. Okay, you sense that? Okay, that's a transfer of knowledge. It just has a different form than linear thinking as we find in academia, which is important for us. And so you're enhanced by that understanding. Okay? So for you, now we yearn. We get into a space called with yearning. And as Arya is telling us, there's an element in it called we're compelled toward this higher. We long for it. It completes us. We are completed by it. And I, for one, am not complete. And I am completed by that journey. I know that direction is the correct direction. And then the hobo's prayer is, I don't know where I am. Do you recall it?
I don't know what I'm looking for.
I don't know what I'm looking for. I know that I'm looking for something. I hope I recognize it when I find it. I know I'm going in the right direction. I don't know if that's in there, but it appears that we're heading in the right direction. We don't need to know other than it resonates with us that we are heading in the right direction.
The yearning, I don't know, discussion here, but that particular idea about yearning, it seems to me to carry the sense of lack, which is to say,
mm-hmm.
I'm thinking of it like the Socrates thing, you know, in the Symposium, you know, in the great chain of being, which is like another form of the octave, of climbing the octave, that you have this tremendous drive, or this, you're drawn towards the higher because you have the knowledge, you have the memory, you know that it is you, that you are an essential self, and that you're not dwelling in it, that you're separated. This is sense of the yearning comes from the awakening, all of these other steps, you're realizing that there's a separation. And the, you know, this is that whole involved discussion that Plato has Socrates give about, you know, that love isn't this buff, beautiful, handsome god who's actually anorexic and starving and so on, because love is symbolized love for the higher is the sense of lacking that you are
both
driven for that you wish you wish and wish and wish and hope and yearn to go towards that, to become
that. Ivan, isn't that the meaning of Eros, to want to climb that chain?
That in this particular interpretation that I'm remembering.
Yeah.
It's the, yeah, the separation. So, you know, that being apart from the absolute, but knowing that you are an essential self.
Well,
you know, is bringing about this yearning.
And that's exactly what's happening in this prayer, because we've now marched into the realm where the presence is suddenly active, dare I say?
Yeah, well, you could say that we're going from sleep or identification to through stages of awakening. So there's a stage of awakening in which you're aware of the suffering, with pity for thy suffering. My presence has become aware of thee. So now what? I could go back. This is in the octave again. Now I could just go back to buffering it, forgetting it.
Or simply to know thee, but to be aware. There's more of your being is involved there, or then beyond that is suddenly you realize that you are separated from that, you yearn back for it, and at that point you go, I want to comfort thee. It doesn't say give me something here.
It's my birthright. Not like where's my birthright.
Yeah, it says give me something. You're the big guy. Give me something. Nuh-uh. It says, when you are in that space, it's not give me something, it's I am compelled to bring forth. And then the next line is just as disturbing.
In ignorance, my presence serves thee.
So now the presence is active. The presence of the voyager is active here. It's aware. It's comforting. And it's serving. It's acting. There's activity here. It's not just comes to thee, knows, awakens to thee, or even to know.
Well, it's gone from wishing. My presence wishes. And my presence serves.
It's just serving. It's just in service at that point. And then it says, in ignorance, it doesn't, there's not a requirement at that moment, oh, well, tell me kind of what I'm going to get when I do this. What's the trade-off here? What's the bling that I get back? In this being compelled. One serves. All there is to it. It's a form. It's the form that love takes when you enter that space. In that form, just what you do. And now we're in a different realm, and we move from there into a contemplation. Think of it. We wonder, in a sense, we wonder about your service. And as you begin to wonder about it, what happens? Okay? Dan is saying that you just start being of service, and only later do you recognize what's going on. Possibly ways and means in which to know how to serve. And Hawk Lady, in mystery, my presence is a comfort to you. Now we've left the human realm long, long ago, and we are in this thing. It's a space. It's a chamber called In Mystery. Mm-hmm. It's exact. These are exact words. Now I am in a space called In Mystery. If you can hang out in that space, it is almost by definition frightening, because you are in the mystery of that state. You are in mystery. And in that realm, suddenly something can happen. And the author says to us, or he puts down on a piece of paper here, in that space, if I can be in that space, right?
In mystery.
If I can be in that mystery, then, once again, my presence is a comfort to be. Then finally, and look where we are in the office, finally, in form and formless, what happens? Again, my presence
comes to be.
So my presence becomes me. Where am I in that? It's this interplay. I am thou, thou art I am thee, and thee is me. Who is you but me? But you are active. Let's repeat again.
After the first three, where it's with clear mind, with pity, with yearning, to the first four, then it becomes in ignorance, in contemplation, in mystery. So, what is the statement, Dan? Consider something you're generating into another space, into a larger space.
At that point, we're in that space.
You're participating, perhaps.
and surrendering to it. A lot of what's going on here is that the personality, the human ego, is sliding away as we walk up this, as we trudge up this octave. It's sliding away and becomes something different. And the last line is, where are you? Who's the you?
Hey, by the way, David, Piandu just wrote this in the log. It's what had occurred to me as well. Gurdjieff, in his book, Meetings with Remarkable Men, closes the chapter on my father with the following. And this is really in resonance and concordance with this last, in form and formlessness, my presence becomes thee. So
yes.
What Gurdjieff says is, I am thou, thou art I, he is ours, we both are his, so may all be for our neighbor. So, I am thou, thou art I, he is ours, we both are his, so may all be for our neighbor.
So if you walk down the road tomorrow and you hold that line, this last one, or if you can recall from the log what Gianjo has written and George has said, you walk down that line and you see somebody before you. There's, let's just say it has fuzzy boundaries, okay? Very fuzzy boundaries. You see an individual who's at very average, very average. And yet you look at them and suddenly if you hold this in your mind, you could see that there's this yearning still going on. They're trying as best they can. A different way of looking at it. I'm not saying they're a guide. I'm just saying that you can see them with a different eye. They may be a guide. So, back on page 128,
talk. Okay, back to the chapter.
Yeah. That was an introduction to this part of the chapter. Prayer absolute is in the form of an objective 9-step octave, which includes 2 intentional retardations introduced by the internal activities. Which is to say, the radiations of non-negative force of the awakened biological machine. Step 1 is the physical, 2 is the emotional, 3 is the intellectual, 4 the real emotional, 5 the real intellectual. But where is the retardation between me and Fa of the 3rd and 4th step? And he goes on to say, the first instruction reads, in motion bowing, my presence comes to thee. This is the first note. So, the second instruction is the second note, Ray. The third instruction is the third note, me. Fourth line reads, with pity for thy suffering, my presence becomes aware of thee. This is the first retardation. We don't need to know the science of this so much as to feel into it. Feel into it as you read through that, and then you feel into that fourth line. That's what I'm trying to get, is that you can feel that there's suddenly a slightly different, something different has occurred. That's what we want to take away with. That's the, as George instructed us last week, that's the memorization. Memorization is a matter of finding your way to this chamber. Then we pass through the 5th note, Fa, the 6th note, So, 7th note, La, the 8th note, Si. In mystery, my presence is a comfort to thee. The 9th note, is obviously the second degradation. Now listen here, and this is the flip. Listen very carefully. The second retardation should be in form, my presence becomes thee after the eighth mantra on the list. So what is the do of the next octave, right? So now, isn't this like an octave and then an octave and then an octave, right? Isn't that what we've been learning in this chapter? But this is a progression of sorts, correct? What he's suggesting then is that what happens if we do go there? In motion bowing, my presence comes to thee. Humbly with heart alive, my presence wakes thee. Then the next optics he's saying is, in motion bowing, thee comes to my presence. Humbly with heart alive, thee awakens to my presence. And so on. What does that mean? Anybody? Where are we? What was the last part of that first octave? Okay.
Well, like Jim H. said a little while ago, we're not in Kansas anymore.
Yeah. We're not in Kansas anymore, and now we're in another realm, and in that realm, which starts with inform and formless as my presence becomes thee, and then it flips. And it says, B comes. So now we are in the heart of invocation. We have put ourselves in a position where B comes to my presence. My presence has matured enough, opened enough, surrendered enough, acquiesced enough, so that it's okay for that to occur. Okay?
Not sure this is interpretable here, David. It seems to me that it's if the V can then awaken to my presence. Pity. V with pity for suffering of my presence. I mean, this is like you've assumed a completely different elsewhere. You're not around here anymore.
You're so, not around here anymore.
It's sort of like it sounds like a version of the Bodhisattva Tao of reincarnation. I mean, it's not something very linear at all.
It is not linear. Don't forget, we have three more chapters ahead of us. And those three chapters are very, very thick. So, but there's a preparatory state, and then we become in a position such that V comes to my presence. I look at it, and I am interpreting. There's no question.
Well, also, you notice, I think what he's doing, I think that in a sense he's cutting and montaging from this, you know, he basically stops that discussion there and he's going to kind of another analogy, which is to say, now if in this other octave, now you start to look at your human lifetime from the point of view of essence or of being, of the absolute. What does a human lifetime look like from the point of view of the absolute spiraling worm in the fourth dimension? any moment in life with respect to the two. You know, like we're now, he's now suddenly talking about divine science.
Divine science.
Yeah.
And in a sense that the, I'm going to point out both Dante and Spinoza. But part of the reason I'm doing this class is that I want to show the position that this material has in the, what I call the human dialectic that's been going on for 2,500 years. Mm-hmm. There's a conversation among the great writers that's occurring. This is part of that conversation. And don't forget, when Dante enters Paradiso, when he enters heaven, there are no words. There's no human form at that point. He can't.
Mm-hmm.
He acknowledges that, but he goes nevertheless. And at the end of Book 5, Spinoza, when he's talking about human freedom, he calls this highest excellence. He says that the individual has reached a point of such clarity that he says, as it were, sees through the eyes of God. And we are no longer in the human realms at that point. We are no longer in those realms. We're in a different realm. And I think of the great Roshis of the Zen teaching, where the students work, they work, they work, they work, they work, nothing, 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 nothing. And then at some point, the Roshi sees the student is on the verge, and they go, they smack him or something like that. And then the word is always...
Yeah, big stick.
And the word is always, and thereupon he became enlightened. We always see that. Because, but it takes one to know one when that moment is right. That's a difficult moment.
David, I have a question, if I might.
Please.
When it's thee comes to my presence, could that have something to do with us offering ourselves up as food to the Absolute?
I don't know how that part works. The way I take it is that we have matured enough so that we are an acceptable receptacle. Receptacle for the divine. We've cleansed the vessel enough such that it has a place to go. I think that the yearning is sitting there in the Godhead too. Yearning, God is waiting there to give us all this treasure, and he's walking around. Who'd like it? Who'd like to take it? You know?
Where is he? So.
Yeah. Where is the moment of clarity when I can say, you know, here?
It's interesting. Harry, I like your question. I think this is a topic for contemplation. Because, I mean, you know, another idea would be that thee comes to my presence in all of these various different ways. And then, you know, what happens to that? Something is going to happen to this lifetime. My presence, which is having this human lifetime, which now he goes on to describe in various ways.
Yeah.
You know, what is this going to do to that lifetime? It's going to be somehow lit up. That, you know, it's going to revolutionize that lifetime.
Absolutely.
You know, either you could visualize it as going backwards in time or simply not having to do with time. It's something, you know, illogical or irrational that can then happen.
It's not rational or irrational.
Well, let's say it's not, according to our best science, it's magic. That was
yeah.
Thing. It's something magical that could happen.
It does light up your entire lifetime. Everybody here who is in this class has the experience as you awaken in the way that we are talking about now. As you awaken into that, you look back on your history, and your history becomes very different. First of all, you're aware of it. That's one.
Yeah, right.
But it does become illuminated, and you see then not your life in forms of your just your linear history, but you go, oh, that event occurred to help me awaken so that I could see this, and then I met this person that helped me get here, and now I'm in the school that I need to be in. So you suddenly, it's illuminated in a fundamentally different manner. And we're at the very beginning of that illumination. There is the idea of the human lifetime represented as a spiraling worm in the fourth dimension. Any moment in life is a section of that tube. Life starts and ends here at the very specific place along the tube. The form of the worm just happens not to be a spiral in this example, meaning that the tube of a lifetime is not straight. This is the contained form which man views as his life, but which really is a hollow passage to various chambers of creation. Each passage is unique and forms what we call individuality or personal experience, and it's all angelic beings are yearning to come back. I just see the choirs of angels seeking to come forth. And this little group that ventures out on Wednesday night, that's what it is. It's just, we're just here singing the praise of the Godhead. We don't know anything else to do. So we can put ourselves in a position to be in a chamber where that magic is alive and active and real right now. And it leaves a mark. It places a penny into our essence bank. It grows 1 inch at a time. Is Simon on?
Yeah. Yes. David, Jim has, I think, is an interesting question.
Go for it.
I'm going to try to put it together from several different postings here, but about thee comes to my presence or my presence comes to thee. He says, but we do, irrespective of which way this happens, do we still have duality? Or is that what we're giving up?
At that point, we're beginning to give up the duality of it. We're not in a position to give up duality yet. But the concept of self becomes very different in these chambers. However, even in those chambers, before you reach the highest chamber altogether, which we are not anywhere close to, before you get to that place, we begin to change what I call the form of the self. You begin to realize that you're not, in a sense, your self takes on a different meaning, but your uniqueness is important because that's what you have in order to steer your own being to this. Does this make sense? your being is, you travel in a different manner than I do. So we need Ivan-ness. Okay? The absolute needs that uniqueness as the path, that particular tube of existence. But it's not associated with the ego called Ivan. It gets confusing. I don't know if that helped at all, Jim. Look, I think I need to say what right now, for this moment, is called David. Next round, it might be called Denise or Frank or some other form, or maybe non-corporeal altogether. I don't know. But there's still jobs that we also become unique to do. Harry is doing such a job right now. Harry, when you open this space up and you start to see the idea of post, do you understand this idea of post now? So the idea of life.
Yes, at least maybe more so.
Yeah, a post. You have a post. Silverdale has a post, and he will fulfill that post, and I am fulfilling a particular post that in a certain way is no different than any other post. It's just the other post. By different, I mean it doesn't have better or worse. It's just post.
Mm-hmm. How about that issue of duality, though? I would like to call to Jim H.'s attention this second retardation, let's say, or the end of this octave.
Yeah.
Or let's say the transition to the next octave is in form and formlessness, my presence becomes thee. So, I don't know if you call that a mystery, or you just call it a formula, or what, but in form and formlessness, both, you know, I am, you know, my presence is united with thee, with the absolute. And this is like, you know, I can't give you an explanation for that. Whatever, you know, what's the, there's a Diamond Sutra or something, it says form is emptiness and emptiness is form. And what does that mean? I mean, this is a formulation like that.
You're no longer Jim H. as such, but the post that Jim H. carries is still your responsibility.
Well, see, this is also saying it's not just an emptiness, or it's not just the voidness of the void, the formlessness,
right,
in which the union takes place. The union is also taking place in form. That's what I get out of it. It's both form and formlessness. So, what's the explanation for that? I don't know.
My feeling about it is that I'm no longer the Jim H. that came to this party.
Mm-hmm.
Jim H. Prime.
Jim H. Prime, okay.
Has a job to do. And I actually think that there's evidence of us watching this Jim H. that we've known now for a year,
mm-hmm,
come into a different form. Haven't we seen him, this name on a screen, come into a different form, even particularly in the last 3 months? You see a different character emerging. There's a clarity that's coming out of this individual.
Serial, yeah. Jim H., Turtles on Turtles.
Turtles on Turtles.
Turtles on Turtles.
Pardon? Yeah.
Yes, it's Turtles all the way down.
All the way down, right, Harry?
Turtles all the way,
yeah,
down. Creation is on the turtle, which is on the next, and Turtles all the way down. But it's not just going into the void. That's the easy answer. Oh, I become united with the, I have the full samadhi, I'm united with everything, everything is everything. It's not that easy. What's the job of the Voyager? The Voyager has no home. The Voyager, mm-hmm, is a Voyager.
Right.
But you carry a job. I mean, I tell you, the fear is accepting that post. The fear is in accepting that post. I look right now, I'm thinking of two individuals, and both of them are looking, barely can keep their eyes away from the post that they know they have to fulfill. But they push away from it dramatically. But you can't hide. The post is there. There are people here in this room that I know have sacrificed to take a pose. So, where is the form and formlessness? Well, the form has something to do with the pose, but the formlessness is that you are no longer Ivanness. You're no longer Ivan. You're the post that that is. And that thing does certain very specific things.
You're talking about the archetype. Yeah, we're heading for the archetype.
Yeah, but it's a particular archetype that is you.
Yeah.
And there's a particular archetype that I am standing in from time to time. And I shudder for that responsibility. It's awe. With fear and trembling. I see it.
Another possibility is that the, you know, this activity, this process that we're propagating in our Wednesday night class, you know, is also taking us away from the form.
Yeah.
I think that the this
yeah.
Space that we're getting into, or whatever we're creating here, is a step from form towards formlessness. In other words, we're in some way we're out of ourselves. Or we're slightly away from ourselves.
David, Mark Roach has an interesting post.
Yeah. Go ahead, Harry.
In form or formlessness, it's nothing at that point but the absolute being aware of itself, even if others around are not so aware.
I sometimes wonder if there's a point at which the others around have to be aware, must be aware. I don't know.
Whenever somebody speaks up like that, like Mark, right now, or Jim H., it's like, certainly, others too, but when Harry just read that from Mark, I had a strong sense of him and what his work and his post is. It just, I don't have a definition of it. I just, it was that sense of that's what Mark does. We take on the mantle of that post by accepting this position called being in mystery. But then we take on the position further when we have acquiescence to it. And it's not, the acquiescence is not a giving up. Acquiescence is like sitting into that position. It's a different kind of word. So that's a place to explore. It's muscle speak.
Spark.
Muscle spark.
Sure.
I know that you volunteered to be the reader next week, but I've not never heard your voice. So, what I'd like is if Aria is still on, she kind of volunteered also. Are you there? And is it okay, Aria? If you take the post that Harry is doing next week. And Tom?
Is her moniker Muspel Spark?
His is, and that's Tom. And Tom, why don't you call in next week so I can hear your voice on the phone as well, but let's let someone else take the position that we're talking about. Is that okay, Aria? Is she still there or did she leave?
She says, I can try.
Good. It's all we ask. And we'll help in any form. We have plenty of people around here to help. Okay? We help each other in those moments. that helps us be in the space just 1 second longer. Good. Good. So then we can take a shot at just practicing being on the phone before you take such a post. These things go slowly, and it's okay to do it slowly because the objective is not the end point of, oh good, I can do it. The objective is this effort at understanding the virtue of self. That's how we work that. Is there anything else that we should cover at this point?
I'm sure there is, but I think we better
push it to next week. A little bit at a breaking point.
Yeah.
Anything else from anybody online then, Kianjo?
No other postings since we last spoke.
So, why don't we call that the end for this evening then? And I thank you all for coming and the proud yearning that I feel exhibited throughout, which is so nice. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week again. Good night.
Thanks a lot. Good night, everyone.
Thank you. Good night.
Good night, Susan.